Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio-guided walk featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within and beyond the West End. Today's episode is about Amarjit Chauhan, a loving father, a devoted husband, and a very successful entrepreneur who lived for business but loved his family above all. But when a lucrative deal went bad, Amarjit would be forced into a deadly dilemma. Murder Mile is researched using authentic sources. It contains moments of satire, shock, and grisly details. And as a dramatization of the real events, it may also feature loud and realistic sounds, so that, no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Michael, I'm your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 124, Signed in Blood, Part 1. Today, I'm standing on the Market Trading Estate in Southall, TW5, 1 mile west of the suicide of child rapist Arnis Elkins, 3 miles south of the deadly drugs trial at Northwick Park Hospital, and just 2 miles northwest of the family home of Amarjit Chauhan. Coming very soon to Murder Mile. Situated off the busy M4 motorway and under the hectic Heathrow flight path, the Market Trading Estate is an industrial complex full of cash and carries, car washes and warehouses. Laid in a T-shaped cul-de-sac, it's flanked by 15 brown brick and grey steel warehouses, with roller-shuttered stockrooms on the ground, office spaces above, and outside, a hive of forklifts stacking pallets of goods into trucks. The only difference between this and any other trading estate is that, being a place where many fruit and veg empires bloom, and the mango mogul, the kumquat queen, and the princes of the quinces reign supreme, past the mangled mopeds and dodgy Datsuns often sits a boss's Bentley. These are business-to-business distributors, where deals and dates are done by the ton and tamarinds are shipped by the truckload. They do sell bananas, but should you wish to buy a bunch, expect to be pitied and patted on the head, laughed at and lampooned, or advised to shop elsewhere, and that you are a frivolous squanderer of time whose father is unknown. Back in 2003, Units 7 and 8 were occupied by Ciba Freight, a specialist importer of Kenyan and Ugandan foods, which was co-owned by Amarjit Chohan. A man who exuded entrepreneurial spirit, but remained humble, kind, and polite. Through hard work, he had built a great life for himself and his family. But when a business deal went sour, his skills in negotiation would make the difference between life and death. As it was here, on Thursday the 13th of February 2003, that Amarjit Chohan left for a business meeting. He was never seen again. And yet his last days alive would be the toughest of his life. It is said that a humble man is often born out of humble beginnings. Amarjit Singh Chohan was born in the Punjab of India on the 5th of March 1957. With imperialist British rule having ceased, its once bounteous lands all raped and plundered, and India now independent but also part of the Commonwealth. Once Britain was gone, the aftershocks of our tyranny would remain with the people of India and Pakistan for decades and almost certainly centuries to come. Amarjit was raised amongst a turbulent time of terrorism, civil war and famine. But as a Sikh, even in his own homeland, Amarjit was not safe. Following the annexation of Sikhism in 1973, and the assassination of Indian Prime Minister Indira Gandhi by her own Sikh bodyguards, this escalated an already fervent hostility against Sikhs, as well as igniting persecution, riots and slaughter. It was never said why Amarjit left India, but his safety was certainly a serious enough reason to flee. In the early 80s, barely 30, Amarjit moved to the UK. Like many immigrants, there is very little evidence about his early life in England. But being educated and skilled, he survived by hard work. With a thick mop of jet black hair on top of his chubby round face, accentuated by arched eyebrows and a thick broad moustache, Amarjit was the epitome of pleasant. And although he had an insatiable drive to thrive and a desire never to be poor, he was always humble. Amarjit was a down-to-earth man who dressed casually in trousers, a shirt and a jumper. His business style was easy but savvy. He was never Mr. Chohan or Sir. He was always Anil or Neil. Everyone who worked for him liked him. And being a Sikh, he didn't drink, do drugs or gamble. But he did get his thrills from business. Even at his most affluent, he lived in a modest little bungalow not far from his warehouse. And he drove a 5-year-old blue Ford Escort, an economical little runabout with just enough seats for his family. In 1996, with a reckless streak and a habit for cutting corners, having been sentenced to 3 years in prison for tax evasion, he was released after 18 months and swore he would always do better. In August 2000, 47-year-old Amarjit married 25-year-old Nancy. And although half his age, within 3 years, together they would build a business empire and a happy, loving family. Amarjit had come from nothing, but through hard graft and raw grit, he had become a success. A respected businessman, a loving husband, a doting father, and a very humble millionaire. His life was good. But by February 2003, everything would be taken from him in the stroke of a pen. On the 9th of August 2000, with his wife Nancy as co-director, Amarjit opened Seba Freight Services UK at a double-wide warehouse on the Market Trading Estate. Being close to Heathrow Airport and the Asian and African communities of Hounslow, it was the perfect location to import fruits, such as bananas, passion fruit, jackfruit and mangoes, but also papaya, pawpaw, mongogo, devil's claw, and even cat, a mildly hallucinogenic narcotic banned in Europe and the USA, but legal in the UK, which predates coffee and tobacco, but is a common and popular stimulant amongst the Somali community. With his business booming, after just 3 years, Seba Freight had an annual turnover of £4.5 million. That same year, following the birth of their first son Ravinder, Amarjit and Nancy moved into a bungalow at 35 Sutton Road in Heston. A very modest, single-floored, four-roomed house in a lower middle-class suburb. It was practical and simply decorated. This didn't look like the home of a millionaire, with a thriving import firm, a bulging bank account, and as landlord, a portfolio of five properties worth £2.5 million. But then again, that was the whole point. The family lived simply and safely. They had everything they needed, but they were never without. In December 2002, being a full-time mum to a boisterous three-year-old, Nancy gave birth to a second son, a little cheeky-faced angel called Davinder. To Amarjit, whose own parents and siblings seemed to have been oddly absent in his life, his new family was everything. And at the centre of it all was Nancy. As a Punjabi Sikh, although her blood family lived on opposite sides of the world, with her mother, Charanjit Kaur Pan in India, and her brother, Onkar Verma in New Zealand, distance meant nothing. In late January 2003, as Nancy was unable to fly him to India, as having applied for British citizenship, her Indian passport was being held by the Home Office. Charanjit flew 4,000 miles to be by her daughter's side. And every day, without fail, Nancy phoned her brother. Encased in a protective family bubble, although Amarjit was a slightly nervous man who kept his cards to his chest, he knew he could rest easy, knowing his family were always safe. So with extra mouths to feed, and two sons who he hoped one day would inherit his empire, Amarjit was looking to expand. Introduced to Amarjit by Michael Parr, one of his partners who co-owned Seba Freight. As a trained HGV driver, Kenneth Avery had begun working for Amarjit, and the two men had become friendly. Being 4 years his senior, a lot of similarities could be seen between Amarjit and Kenneth. Both were roughly the same age. Both were a little bit chubby. Both came from modest working class roots. And as the two men always dreamed big, they both had a burning desire to take risks and reap the rewards. Looking less like a hard-nosed trader and more akin to a second-hand car dealer, Kenneth was a pale, fat and jowly man with fair hair on top and grey clumps along the sides. And being dressed in casual jeans and an old rugby top, His modest look matched Amarjit's. In January 2003, Kenneth had a money-making deal that he knew Amarjit would love. Aided by an old friend, Belinda Bruin, an elegant and successful PR exec with a solid reputation and some serious celebrity clout, Kenneth proposed a £3 million deal to build a McDonald's franchise at Haddon Cross. Sadly, the deal collapsed. But Amarjit wasn't unnerved. Not every deal was a success. But seeing that, like himself, Kenneth Avery was not averse to cutting a few corners, Amarjit could see that Kenneth wasn't full of hot air. The morning of Thursday the 13th of February 2003 was as regular as any other. As devout Sikhs, the Chauhan family woke a few hours before dawn and they bathed and prayed before sitting down to breakfast. Their bungalow was busier than usual, as Charanjit, Nancy's mother, wasn't due to leave for two more weeks. But as a softly spoken 51-year-old teacher, who was never without her holy book, the Guru Granth Sahib, she was a calming influence on a modest home with a new baby and an excitable boy. At roughly 8 a.m, dressed casually in a navy blue jumper, black trousers, socks and shoes, Amarjit kissed his wife and kids, popped on a coat as it was cold, and hopped into his blue Ford Escort. At 8:30 a.m, he parked up in his regular spot outside of Seba Freight. Amarjit entered the first floor mezzanine, which overlooked the warehouse. He greeted his staff, he checked his post, and he casually told his co-partner, Michael Parr, "I'm off to do a deal." This was not unusual, as Amarjit was often secretive. A risk-taker who, some said, ran his company chaotically. But no one ever queried this, as business was booming. And above all, he was the boss. Always seeking new adventures, he would often disappear for hours and even days on end. But he could always be contacted on his mobile, replying in English to his staff and Punjabi to his wife. Nothing else was said about the meeting, except that Kenneth had secured a potential buyer for the company. The meeting was soon, and the buyer was Dutch. Only that wasn't Amarjit's only secret, as although he was wealthy on paper, being in serious financial trouble, he had recently siphoned off £50,000 from the business to his own account, using three company checks. At roughly 9 a.m, Amarjit left Seba Freight. But from that point onwards, the details get vague. With a license plate of S840LJH, a network of traffic cameras would later track his blue Ford Escort, travelling 76 miles at a steady pace across the next 1 hour and 20 minutes. He exited the Hayes Road at Bulls Bridge, travelled south along the parkway, southeast on the M4 and the M3, joined the A303 at North Waltham in Wiltshire. But being a rural area, the cameras lost him somewhere near Stonehenge. The exact time and place of Amarjit's meeting with the Dutch buyer is unknown, as he didn't own a diary. He didn't tell his staff, and although he and Nancy had texted en route, their messages, written in Punjabi, were loving but nothing special. Just the standard reminders between a husband and a wife. As for what we do know, the details may seem odd, but either Amarjit was unfazed, or desperate. It is not known why he agreed to meet a stranger somewhere as secluded as a lane near Stonehenge. The infamous Neolithic monument of two vertical rings of 25-ton stones. But having travelled from Holland, the Dutch buyer may have been sightseeing. Perhaps the buyer had relatives or was staying in a hotel nearby. Or maybe this was just a recognisable place to meet before moving on. At an unknown time, possibly around 10:30 or 11 a.m., a white transit van pulled up. Again, this may seem suspicious, as why should any potential buyer of a multi-million pound business empire arrive to a meeting in a locally rented van with the hire company's details down the side? But then again, Amarjit's modest little motor was hardly the stylish wheels of a wealthy tycoon. Only the deal didn't exist. The buyer wasn't Dutch. And this wasn't a meeting. It was an ambush. Drugged with a rag, soaked in gamma-hydroxybutyric, the day-trade drug known as GHB, as a devout Sikh whose religion didn't permit him to drink, to do drugs, or even stimulants like coffee or tobacco, the effect on Amarjit was instant, as his body was rendered silent and motionless by the intoxicant. With his face, hands and feet tied with brown parcel tape, Amarjit was slung in the back of the van by two men, maybe three, with one definitely driving, another in the back, and maybe one following behind in his blue Ford Escort. Maybe they were masked. Maybe they were armed. Maybe he knew them. He didn't know. But what he did know was none of them were Dutch. Driven cautiously, the white van and the blue Ford crawled 6.2 miles south along the isolated field flank roads from Stonehenge, down the quiet A360 to South Newton. A quaint little village, surrounded by a few sparse farms, thousands of acres of crops, and a single solitary pub. Both vehicles then entered Forge Close, a small L-shaped cul-de-sac, with two cottages on either side, allotments behind, and at the end stood a small terraced bungalow made of brown bricks and white sills with a neat little lawn. It's the kind of place an elderly widower might retire to live out his final days. With barely enough space, the van reversed along the side wall of the bungalow to the left, and parking close to the side gate, in broad daylight, the doped and tied hostage was dragged inside by the three men. As a kidnapper's safe house, Three Forge Close looked harmless. Being a small assisted living space with a bedroom, a kitchenette, and a small sitting room with a telly, an armchair, slippers to one side, and on a side table, a few photos, some bills, and a copy of the Racing Post. Of the three kidnappers, Amarjit didn't recognise William Hornsey, also known as Bill, a small, sickly-looking 52-year-old with a receding hairline and a vacant stare. He thought he knew Peter Douglas Rees, a 38-year-old with a crap moustache and a bad mullet, having previously impersonated a Dutch buyer on the phone and laid the mezzanine floor at Seba Freight just a few weeks before. But the main man that Amarjit definitely recognised was his friend and potential business partner, Kenneth Avery. Only Avery wasn't Avery. His real name was Kenneth Roy Regan. A bad man with a bad name and a very bad temper, who had earned his fearsome reputation and ill-gotten fortune as a forger, a con man, a drug smuggler, and as Hampshire police believed, but could never prove, a very violent and sadistic killer. Still drugged, with one of Amarjit's wrists secured to the floral armchair, before him on the coffee table lay a pen and a stack of blank sheets of headed paper emblazoned with the logo of Seba Freight. Pointing, Kenneth barked,
"Simon."
But with his mouth muffled by parcel tape, Amarjit refused. No was not a word that Kenneth liked to hear. So without warning, Amarjit was violently beaten as a volley of fast fists pummeled his head and face. With the curtains closed, the kidnapper's assault had some privacy. But with allotments behind and the bungalow's walls wafer thin, he had to be quiet.
"Sign them,"
Kenneth growled as his hostage bled. But with his director's signature on a stack of blank sheets of Seba Freight paper, Amarjit knew that Kenneth could do anything to his business. Everything he had worked for would be gone. But this wasn't about his present. It was about his family's future. Kenneth knew how to break him, with drugs, beatings, and threats. But being both a psychopath and a sociopath, Kenneth Regan had overlooked a small, and he thought, insignificant little detail, which was irrelevant to his plan. Several times, Nancy had texted, but she got no reply. Calling his mobile, it went to voicemail. And with the day becoming night, and the night becoming day, hearing no news, a frantic Nancy called Michael Parr, his partner at Seba Freight. Rightfully panicked and anxious, unable to reassure her,
"He's probably fine. You know Anna."
He called the one man who he knew that Amarjit had said he was with, Kenneth Regan. The plan had changed.
"Say it."
He still needed his signature, but first he needed his voice.
"Say it."
If this failed, the police could be called and arrests would be made.
"Say it."
So armed with his own phone, Kenneth sped back from Wiltshire to Southall and to the little bungalow of Nancy Chohan. In the sitting room, as Chiranjit tried to get the two screaming boys to sleep, Kenneth reassured Nancy that everything was fine. Amarjit was good. The deal with the Dutch went well. Very well, in fact. So he had popped over to Holland to seal the deal. But his phone was playing up. Nancy didn't believe a word of this. So Kenneth pulled out his phone and proved it. The message was unmistakably Amarjit. He said,
"Hello, Nancy.
Don't panic. I'm okay. I'll be back tomorrow." He sounded well and chirpy. As Nancy burst into tears, less through worry and more through exhaustion and relief, with his victim's wife now pacified, Kenneth drove back to Wiltshire, and once again, it was back to business.
"Sign it."
For 2 days, Amarjit was beaten, drugged, and starved. Weakened by exhaustion, and with GHB making him euphoric, even at his most vulnerable, he continued to resist. But sometimes, even the simplest of torture methods can be the most brutal. With his ankles and wrists tied to the armchair and a red scarf gagging his voice, the brown parcel tape was wound tightly around the front and back of his head. Only the thick plastic film didn't just cover his chin, his lips, and his cheeks. It also covered his eyes and formed a tight seal across his nose. Unable to pull it off or inhale a single breath, this brown plastic mask rapidly bulged and dented, pulsing in hot bursts as he struggled for air. Each time he passed out, Kenneth awoke him and did it again and again and again. For Nancy, the recorded message had brought her a little comfort. But as she began to calm down and to rationalize the events of the day, there were a few details which only the wife of Amarjit Chauhan would know didn't make any sense. If her husband's phone had stopped working, why didn't he use Kenneth's to call her? If Kenneth had an audio message from her husband, why didn't he send it electronically instead of driving 80 miles to hand deliver it? He had told all of the staff at Seba Freight that Amarjit had flown to Holland to seal the deal. But Nancy knew that wasn't possible, as he would never leave the country without telling her first. And with her application for British citizenship still being considered, Amarjit's passport was held by the Home Office. And finally, that message. Although the voice was definitely Amarjit's, the words were not. As with English not being her first language, the couple always communicated in Punjabi. Nancy knew that something was seriously wrong. She just didn't know what. In the sitting room at Forge Close, exhausted from 2 days' beatings and torture, Amarjit remained stoic. As a shrewd businessman, even against someone as brutal and ruthless as Kenneth, he still knew how to play hardball, even when the odds looked bleak. But by that point, there was no denying that Amarjit Chauhan knew that he was going to die. But his death would leave him with a very deadly dilemma. Give up his company and risk his family's futures, or refuse to sign and risk their lives. There was no way that Amarjit would ever put his family in jeopardy. So the only way that Kenneth could get what he wanted was if the papers were signed in blood. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. The final part of Signed with Blood continues next week. As always, if you like tea, cake and waffle, as well as learning a few tidbits about this case, please join me after the break. But before that, here's a brief promo for a true crime podcast which may be the audio equivalent of what Eva is to me.
Good evening, friends. I'm Emma, the host of the True Crime Witch podcast. Join me every other week as we delve into everything murderous, mysterious, and downright macabre. You can find the podcast by searching the True Crime Witch podcast on all of your favourite podcast apps, and search for us on social media just using the True Crime Witch. Hope to see you there. Remember, friends, stay safe and stay spooky.
A big thank you to my new Patreon supporters, some of whom have received exclusive goodies such as badges, stickers and keyrings, as well as patron-only podcasts such as Walk With Me and Deadly Thoughts. Ooh! They are Kate Wakefield, Joe Wood, Laura Working at Harden, and Kat Stewart. I thank you all. Murder Mile was researched, written and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Eric Stein and John Books of Cult With No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Oh, that was longer than the others. How? That was, oh, that was simply written and it took bloody ages. Oh! Hello, everyone. Extra mile time. How are we all? We all good? That just took too long. I don't know why that took really long. And there's nothing really complicated in there. It's just I kept tripping up. And the ice cream man was coming around again. God knows why it's ice cream man. And we got, because the weather's getting a little bit better, all of the rich Berks who've got themselves little private little two-seater are flying around because there's loads of private airports near where I am, and you get all the little businessmen going, I need to get across London, I know I'm going to get into my little crappy little and fly across, I'll be at the meeting in an hour, I'm in my private helicopter or jet, whatever, all crap. And the problem is because they're tiny, they fly really slow, but they it's like a little mosquito and you can hear them flying and they go wee, and that means I can't do any recording for like 3 minutes while you wait for them to go by. Oh, that's so frustrating. Anyway, extra mile time. Right, let me go and put on my what am I going to do? Should I do a coffee? Tea or coffee? I've got, my thing is coffee in the morning. And then I move on to tea. And then later in the afternoon, I go to Earl Grey. And then after that, then I move on to peppermint tea. I kind of... peppermint tea. And then sometimes I go for a Bisto or something. I think I'm going to have to go for another coffee because I'm tired. Let's just see. Hang on. Not quite enough water. You may realise recently, I know I say I don't edit out Extra Mile, but what I've started doing is, because quite a few people have said, we can't hear you on this bit. So what I've started doing, I've started really bumping up the audio just on this bit here. So you can hear me in the kitchen, make me a cup of tea. It won't sound good, but it's enough. You can hear exactly what I'm saying. So I'm just putting in my powdered milk, as always, or into my Murder Mile mug. Ooh, excitement. Lots of Murder Mile mugs. Right, that's on. Good. Whoa. Right. What have I treated myself to today? Cake time.
Whoa.
I like to save this one ready for the recording, but it's worth it. This is from Lidl. These are chocolate donuts from Lidl, and they're very good. They're proper donuts. They sometimes do ring donuts, and they sometimes do the caramel chocolate donuts, which aren't as nice. But this is the proper donut without the hole in the centre, and it's got a thick base of chocolate on the bottom, and the donut itself is nice. It's not too squishy, not too soft, not too oily. And then there's big. It's not really chocolate. It's like Nutella. It's the hazelnut one, but it's in the center. God, it's good. And then it's got, oh yeah, they're like 50p each. But when you eat them, you just go, ooh, yum, delicious. That is going to be my treat. I had one the other day, and when I was writing, I was trying to write this, and I was going, oh right. Right, when it gets to 12 o'clock, I will treat myself to a donut, but not till then. And that was like, push yourself forwards to have a lovely donut, which was lovely. So I also tried the other day, the diet's going well, thank you very much. The other day I tried Cadbury's Caramel and Dairy Milk Chocolate Flapjacks. And I thought, well, I love flapjacks. I love Cadbury's Dairy Milk. I love Cadbury's Caramel. So this must be a winner. Absolutely disgusting, really disgusting. So on paper they sound like a great idea, but I tried them, and they were in Tesco's, and they were going for like silly prices, and I thought, well, I'll give them a try. And then I was like, well, now I know why. It's because they just don't work. Sorry, Cadbury's. Love Dairy Milk, love Cadbury's Caramel, but just your flapjacks, just those, oh, disgust. Oh, I've just knocked over my sound boom thing. Right, okay. What else is going on? I've just ordered some more Murder Mile mugs. Ooh, exciting, because I actually ran out. So I've ordered... I live miles away from my P.O. box, so I had to get 3 rucksacks and extra bags and stack them up. So I was walking along the street like a... I looked like a homeless man who got all his belongings with him, but in there was just Murder Mile mugs and some new cards and things like that. So they've been ordered. So if you want to order a Murder Mile mug of goodies, they're available online. I think they're about £12, which is not too bad. That's pretty good. Oh, tea's up. It's coffee, so obviously I don't have to let it stew. And some people might be thinking that I'm a bit of a heathen, because it's not the coffee that you have to put into a cafetiere. It's the old World War II style instant coffee. I quite like instant. I don't like fancy coffee. I just find it too strong sometimes. Anyway, so Murder Mile mugs are available. They're about £12. In there you get the Murder Mile mug, exclusive Murder Mile mug. You get all the badges and fridge magnets, and I throw in key rings as well. I'm going to have to order some more key rings because I'm running out of those as well. They're available. You can get... Or you can subscribe to the new tier on Patreon, which is called the Whole Blocker. You get early Murder Mile, you get Walk With Me, you get all the outtakes that go in there. They've been good fun to make. You get Deadly Thoughts, which is the new interactive podcast with me and Eva. But also you get a Murder Mile mug of goodies as well. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good deal. In fact, I actually make a loss. Actually, to be honest, on the first month of Patreon, I make a loss all the time anyway. But I don't mind. I don't mind, as long as people are getting value for money. That's what I worry about most, is thinking, oh shit, am I giving people enough stuff, enough interesting stuff? Not just, this is shit I found, this is stuff, good stuff. What else is going on? My little plant. I've got a little plant on my boat, my little calancho, which is like a mountain cactus. Very good. It's the only plant I've ever been able to keep, because I normally kill plants. They normally die quickly. I normally overwater them or underwater them or whatever. But the calancho is great. It's like, you can not water him for ages, and he can sit in the boat, and it can go between like -0 and then 40 degrees, because I've got the fire on, and he's like, yeah, I don't care, and then I can pop him on the roof and he can have some sun, and he's all right. So that's my little plan. That was the one, Amy, that you got me for Christmas. So he's doing all right. I've just put him into a bigger pot so he can have a little bit of a run, a little of a planty run around. What else is going on? Oh, I have a slurp of tea. I'm not going to tuck into my donut just yet, because this is going to be to be savoured. Oh dear, that's hot. That burnt my lips. So I hope you enjoyed that case. That was Another one of these ones where obviously the police file isn't available because it's so fresh, but it was interesting enough. I kind of stumbled across it, but what I realised was that the press had reported on it, but they hadn't bothered to do any digging. So most of the articles out there are very inaccurate. A lot of the information as well, as we've seen many times, has been rehashed. So someone will just get the press release and they'll just basically rehash that. They'll find some Twitter sources so they can say a friend of the family says, or sources close to, which is always bullshit. But all of it was inaccurate. So I had to get all the details down and do a lot of digging myself. Unfortunately, a lot of the details, as you can see, to do with the kidnapping and stuff like that, are very kind of sparse because a lot of it wasn't, it went to court, but a lot of the details didn't come up there because obviously, you know, you've got the Chohan family who, no, I was about to do a spoiler then. There's not a lot of details out there. Let's just say that. You'll find out more next week. But I did my usual thing. I cycled to all the locations I went to. Obviously not the ones in Wiltshire because that's too far for me to travel. But I went to Seba Freight. That was interesting to see it because it's right next to the Tesco's at Bulls Bridge, which I've been to many times before. And I didn't realise that's how close it was. So that was interesting to see. It as always, these locations don't look as they did in kind of news reports and things like that. You get there and you go, oh, this is what it looks like. And then I cycled over to the Chohan family house, which is no longer there. It was demolished years ago. So there's a new one there. And I got there and I was like, well, that must be where it is. That's 35. And I knew, and I looked at the building and I went, okay, that's a relatively new building. So that is right. And I recorded all the pieces. And then I cycled home and I went, ah, shit. It was only when I got home I realised I was standing on Sutton Hall Road, but one road below is Sutton Road, which is the road I needed. So I was actually standing in front of the wrong bloody building. So I'm back this weekend to reshoot it. That's why I always come back and I always double check everything before I put it out, just to make sure it's right. Oh dear, that was good. Right, I just need to do something before we move on. I've got to do a recording for CrimeCon. So because my microphone's on, I'm going to do it now. You can fast forward it through if you want, but there's some interesting stuff. So let me get my... this is just something they're going to use this week. So I thought I can do it now. That'd be great. Right. Let me put on my podcast voice. This is not my podcast voice. This is... Right, get ready. Switch on podcast voice. Hello, this is Mike, host of the world-famous Murder Mile UK True Crime Podcast, and widely regarded as the greatest thing to have ever entered a person's ears since time began. And that's a fact. I'm deeply honoured to be part of Podcast Row at CrimeCon UK on the 25th and 26th of September 2021. If you love true crime, please check out my audio doings, cleverly entitled Murder Mile. And should you purchase a ticket and save yourself 20% by using the promo code MILE, you can come and meet me in person. Yes, I'm real. Yes, I'm real. You can touch me, not too much, just a little, and not down there. That's rude. To do so, treat yourself to 2 days. To do so, treat yourself to 2 days of murderously good fun at CrimeCon. See you there. There we go. I didn't make too many mistakes. Obviously, I'll edit that before it goes out. And that helps me because I have to do a kind of intro to you about CrimeCon. It's contractual and all that, but I thought I'd update you on that. So CrimeCon is moving ahead. It's going away ahead in September. Those dates, as mentioned, it's supported by the Crime and Investigation Channel, which do loads of great programs. And obviously, you're going to see loads of true crime experts and authors and renowned investigative journalists and content makers. They've recently announced that along there as well will be actress and TV presenter Denise Welsh, who English people will know from Corrie. I think she was on Corrie. But she's been doing a new series called Survivors with Denise Welsh, so she'll be there. Broadcaster and journalist Dermot Murnaghan. I'm Dermot Murnaghan. Top-rated true crime series, Crimes That Shook Britain, that's what he does. But recently he's been doing a programme called Killer Britain with Dermot Murnaghan. Obviously not with that voice. And also there will be TV and radio broadcaster Anita Rani, who narrated Family Man, which was a one-off special about domestic abuse, but is also going to be the host of the new series of Murder Town. There's loads of stuff going on. So top-selling author Neil Lancaster will be there. Criminologist and author Professor Paul Britton will be there. Loads of people. A geographic profiling expert, Dr. Samantha Lundgren. You know, yeah, you should hear the outtakes on the if you're on Patreon, you get the outtakes one. The outtakes for last week's episode, the Northwick Park one, that was like the longest outtakes ever, because it was all these complicated names, but not only just like diseases and medicines and things like that, but all of a sudden it was like Dr. Sarantha and just all these names that I couldn't get into my head, and it was always killing me. Anyway, oh dear. Right, quick slurp. So that was that. Let's dive into some details about this episode. What I'm going to do is do some background stuff. I'm not going to dig in too much to the episode because I've still got to write part two. And I think with some of that, we're going to start dipping back and forth. There were elements in here that I've put in to kind of lead you into next week. So next week you can go, oh, so that's what that was. So I don't want to do too. So we're going to do a lot of early stuff. So Amarjit Singh's chin. I can't even pronounce that. Amarjit's. I've had this all day. My brain isn't switched into gear, which is weird because I had a good sleep as well. Amarjit Singh Chauhan was 46. He was also known as, most people knew him as Anil. Some of his staff knew him as Neil as well. That's kind of the Englishized version of Anil. He was born on the 5th of March 1957, a British national, but was born in the Punjab in India. As mentioned, he had thick jet black hair, very rounded eyebrows, a thick moustache. Seems like a really nice guy. Everyone said he was a good family man, loving husband, solid businessman, loving father. Really nice to work with, but could be quite secretive. Do you know, he kept his cards to his chest. But apart from that, he was well-liked, very friendly, personable. Quite a casual business style. He dressed casually, but he was clearly very smart and savvy. But, you know, some people said he ran his business a little bit chaotically. Others said, you know, that's just how he was. He kind of lived for the moment, you know. And if you think about it, you know, he built a successful empire. It was making, what, £4.5 million every year. So, you know, he obviously knows what he's doing. Came to the UK in the early 20s. We reckon around the early 1980s. Clearly educated and keen to do well, but we don't really know a lot about him. Unfortunately, there's not really a lot of details about his parents or his siblings. Weirdly, in all of the reports, they don't appear anywhere. Nancy's family do, his don't. So it's unknown whether there was a family dispute, whether the family stayed in India, whether they're still alive, we don't know, or whether because he was living bigamously, which we'll get to, you know, with his first wife, because he married his first wife but then couldn't divorce, whether his family had disowned him, we don't know. But obviously, because he's an immigrant, there's a lot of details that's really hard to establish. But everyone who knew him said, look, he was a successful man, but he was quite humble about it, you know. Didn't like gold watches, flashy suits, sports cars, you know. Not one of those twats who goes around going, oh, look at my car, like that, you know. People can have flashy suits and sports cars if they like. That's fine, that's not a problem. Please don't email me. Go, I've got a sports car, you say I'm a twat. This is the difference. He didn't wear his wealth. I think sometimes you see that on the streets, don't you? You see people walking along dripping in gold jewellery and stuff like that with an earpiece in, and you just go, yeah, you're trying to make out like you're some kind of big guy, some kind of, you know, businessman, but you're clearly not. Do you know, it's a work day and you're sitting outside the Wetherspoons having a couple of pints. Just get a job, mate. But he wasn't like that. He was, you know, very down to earth. You know, many people live beyond their means. He didn't. He didn't rack up debts. He didn't have credit cards, as far as we know. He didn't have loans. But he was a risk taker. So, you know, he always made sure he had kind of a balance behind him. As mentioned, being a Sikh, his faith doesn't allow him to drink alcohol or have any intoxicants. This includes, as mentioned, drugs, drink, coffee, tobacco, that kind of thing. That's not allowed. So when you think about it and you look into the story, when they were giving him GHB, the date rape drug, that must have had a massive effect on his body, because his body's just like us. Like, you know, If you like coffee, you try and go a day, like 2 or 3 days without coffee, your body is struggling. Like if you're a smoker as well, exactly the same. I quit smoking years ago, and the first week of that was bloody awful. But if you're not used to intoxicants, and you're or like, this is the thing I used to, days of smoking. I used to love that, quitting smoking for a year and then having that first drag, and you can feel all the drugs in your system just going, whoa, shit. But obviously for him, imagine that. It's like, even though he sold cat, which is to, you know, you see that in a lot of films that are based in Somalia, where they're sitting there and they're chewing leaves, and you know, everyone's getting high. It's kind of an intoxicant that's used in the Somali community. Even though he sold that because it was legal in the UK, he didn't use it himself. Makes sense, really. You don't if. It's like they say with, not that he's a drug dealer, but it's like they say with drug dealers, you know, good drug dealers aren't drug addicts. Do you know, you don't piss on your own patch, you don't eat your own, you don't take your own product. But when you do start doing that, your life collapses. He had a first marriage. We don't really know a lot about this. We know he was married, we don't know her name. Unfortunately, there's quite a few Amarjit Chauhans of the roughly the same age around that time, so I couldn't really find out a lot. But he was married. Apparently, he did have a child or several children with his first wife. They were married. For whatever reasons, it didn't work. Given his faith, he was unable to divorce. Even though he's no longer with his wife, apparently he still supported them. But pretty much most of their details were kept out of the press. As mentioned, in 1996, he was convicted of 2 charges of tax evasion and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. And he served 18 months of that. So he came out middle of 97, start of 98-ish. But within 2 years, he would marry Nancy. So Nancy Verma, they were married in August 2000 down in Surrey. He was still married to his first, so technically this is a bigger mismarriage, but, you know, there's not really a lot he could do with it. You know, he loved Nancy, but he couldn't divorce because of his religious beliefs. Nancy was 25. She was born in India on the 30th of January 1979. Like him, she was a Punjabi Sikh and an Indian national. I'm not too sure when she came over to the UK, but she hadn't got a passport yet, and she was still applying for British citizenship. Hence, her Indian passport was with the Home Office, as was his. Her mother-in-law came over, as mentioned. Her name, Charanjit Karpan. She was 51, a teacher. And Onkar Verma, who's Nancy's brother, who's 28, lives in New Zealand. He's going to crop up a lot more in part two. So that's why I've kind of flagged up both of them in this episode. But as mentioned, even though he didn't seem to have much of a relationship, Amarjit didn't have much of a relationship with his own family, Nancy had a very close relationship, not just with him, but with her mother and her brother as well. So as mentioned, they had a son who was born in 2000, so around the time that they got married. 9th of August 2000, Amarjit by Seba Freight. Now, Seba Freight wasn't originally called Seba Freight. It was originally known as IG Transport Solutions Limited. And it was incorporated in April 1996. But I've done the company's house details on this, so it's not. There's quite a few people who seem to have owned it before, so I'll post this on Patreon if people are interested, and maybe on social media. So in 1996, Ranjina Watts was the company owner. Hardil Singh Dillon was also a director, and one other as well who I've got written here, but they both resigned just afterwards, so it looked like it was a buyout. So Amarjit bought them out, and then Nancy came in as co-director on there and company secretary. But around this point, she was like a full-time mother of eventually two. So Exactly how much time she actually spent at the company, we don't know. Amaljit was a very hands-on businessman. As mentioned, they had a little home at 35 Sutton Road in Heston. Heston is kind of, you know, a kind of a lower middle class area. Quite a nice area, but it's right on the Heathrow flight path. It's like when you're there, you can literally see people in the windows of the jets as they fly over. So, Joe, a nice little area. Their home was sold not long after try not to do spoilers there. The home was valued at around £300,000, but it was demolished not long. I think it was around 2004, 2005 that was demolished. So it's not there anymore. But if you look in that area, there's quite a few bungalows in the area. I've tried to explain it as best I can for people who don't use the word bungalow, but bungalow is kind of like a one floored. Is it called a duplex in America? I don't know. I don't know what all these different titles are. We call them a bungalow, but it's kind of a one-floored house. Everything's on one floor. You know, there's no stairs to go up and down anywhere. It's just on one floor. And if you go to Heston, there's loads of those around. So there's loads of little bungalows dotted around, which have been a little bit fancified. So in some cases, you might find the Doric columns and the, as mentioned in there, like the stone tigers outside. So it's meant to look like, oh, you're meant to look at it and go, oh, look, this is like a really grand, expensive place. They've got Doric columns and they've got stone tigers keeping guard, and oh look, there's things that look like gold, and it's not gold, it's tin, which is colored gold. And the houses might look a little bit cheap, but then outside you've got a really, really expensive, like high spec Mercedes. It's kind of that area. But even though their home was only worth around £300,000, he, as mentioned, he had five properties across the UK, which was worth around £2.5 million. So yeah, it wasn't a shabby house. It was just simple. I guess it's part of his religion. He lived simply. He's a humble man, as they say. What else have we got? I've mentioned it a lot in here. His old S-Reg Ford Escort. His son was born December 2002. So when all this was going on, obviously Devinda was only 8 weeks old. What else we got? So keep an eye on the time. Make sure I'm not overrunning. Because this is going to be a half an hour episode, and I don't want extra mile to beat. Last week's one was huge. I was like, how did it get so far? But there was a lot to discuss on that one. As we know, next week's episode, we're going to learn a lot about Kenneth Regan and his cohorts. That's really what that's going to be about, but also focusing on the family as well. So roughly around July 2002, Kenneth Regan got to know Michael Parr, who was one of the co-partners. We know that Regan worked as a HGV truck driver, that he was trained in that before. So that he may have been working for Amarjit and the company around that time. But that's how he got to know Amarjit and kind of got to know the insides and outsides of his operations. And he became very familiar with the people and, you know, what was going on. But obviously around that point he was referring to himself as Kenneth Avery, which was his alias. So if they would have done checks, they wouldn't find Kenneth Avery the criminal, because Kenneth Avery the criminal didn't exist. But if they were to find out that Kenneth Regan had a long history, we'll go into that next week. There's a lot to discuss about Kenneth. I'm not going to do much about the McDonald's deal as well, because that's going to come back to haunt us next week as well. So we'll dive into that quite deeply as well. As mentioned, I've kind of precursed this for next week's episode as well. Obviously, Nancy had an 8-week-old baby, a 3-year-old boy. Her mother had come over, so Charanjit was there. Anka Verma, her brother, was going to come over on the 18th, so that's only a couple of days away. So they're all gearing up for this. This was going to be quite a nice moment for all the family and all that going on. Life was good. They hadn't got any money problems. Everything seemed good. We know that Amarjit had siphoned off £50,000 from his business account, from the company business account to his personal account, which you're not allowed to do. But as far as we know, he didn't have any debts or credit cards or anything like that. That didn't seem to be his thing. But he did need money, and he didn't do it properly through business dealings, things like that. So we're not too sure why he did that. That seems to be one of those things that is just unexplained. What he needed that £50,000 for, we don't know. We've done all the details about his last seen alive. Meeting at Stonehenge, I mean, that's an odd one. We don't know where that happened at all. If you go on Google Maps and look at Stonehenge and then do the Street View version, have a look around. It's weird. It's like Stonehenge is very isolated. It's by itself because it's a public monument. You can't build near it. And they've tried their best to make sure that there's no buildings on the horizon. Because, do you know, if you look at something like the Taj Mahal is beautiful. Or like the... Do you know, the Sphinx over in Egypt, they're all beautiful. But the problem is you have to get one shot of it. And if you turn the camera like 10 degrees to the left or the right, you're going to see high rise buildings. It's horrible. They've just literally built everywhere. They're like, oh, land, let's build. Whereas the Stonehenge, they've deliberately kept that kind of as clear and, you know, so it can be as remote as possible. So it's interesting that they met there, but there's like one main road going through. There's a couple of side roads, but they tend to be, because there's no real good parking near Stonehenge, people tend to park up in the side roads. So where they met up, we don't know. How close it was to Stonehenge, we don't know. Whether they met at Stonehenge and then drove somewhere else, we don't know. These are all kind of details that we don't really know about it. But what we do know is there's no cameras in the area. Nobody witnessed them. If they did witness them, they must have thought nothing about it because there's lots of cars parked around and, you know, who knows. The exact timing of it is unknown. Roughly 10:30 or 11 o'clock, we don't know. Who would have spotted a white transit van and a blue Ford around that? It's not like these are kind of unique cars. If it would have been like, if say Amarjit would have had a car, which, as I said at the start, was like, you know, a Beamer or a Bugatti with a license plate that said banana or cherries, people would have noticed that. But because both the vehicles were, you know, not very suspicious, they kind of blended in. But this is an odd area as well. It's kind of, because it's Salisbury Plain, it's where a lot of the military do exercises. There's like tanks being tested, bombs going off, you know. It's an interesting place. So there's a lot of security there. So it seems, I guess it was chosen because it was local to Kenneth Regan's safe house, inverted commas, safe house. I hope you enjoyed the description of that. I've put a little picture online of the safe house. It's baffling. His father's retirement home, his father's retirement bungalow, and he picked that as a safe house. And if you type in Forge Close, Three Forge Close on Google Maps and have a look at it, it's like there's a man outside washing his car. They've blurred out his face so you can't see who he is, but there's allotments behind. The bungalow is connected to another bungalow or two bungalows. It's not the kind of place you would think that you'd have as a safe house and a place where you'd want to torture a man to death. It's weird, it really is. But that's where they chose. I don't know, it's an odd one. So that's that, I think. I think that's everything. Yeah, that's everything. God, dear, what time is it? Oh, it's almost 10 o'clock. Oh, dear. Oh, yawn o'clock. Yeah, that was an early start. And it's taking... Oh, I've barely got to this point now. So I'm going to have my coffee. I'm going to have my donut. I'm going to do all Eva's washing for her because she's a lazy cow and she's in bed. If you want to know more, check out Deadly Thoughts. Whoa! My exciting podcast with me and Eva. I do the cooking. She does the sitting on her ass. Anyway, that's that. Hope you enjoyed that. That was all good and fun. Next week is part two of Signed in Blood. So I hope you enjoy that. I don't know what's after that. I've got a list somewhere, but I'm just not looking at it. Anyway, best wishes. Stay safe. Be good. Lots of love. Bye-bye. Switch off. There we go.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.